Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everyone. Happy Tech Tuesday. I am Dr. Baker of Dr. Baker & Associates, the business hospital. We are the only business hospital in the world, servicing 14 countries. And if you've heard the show, you would know that I wake up every day looking for ways to help businesses maintain their health, grow their business, and make sure that their operation is working as efficiently as possible. And so this radio show is no different. My job here is to make sure that you have an avenue for assistance in the event that you would like on-air treatment, and to bring you new tips, strategies, information, and awareness to make you a better business owner. If you want to join today's show, you can do so by calling 859-291-2255. Once again, that number is 859-291-2255. And you can send a direct note to info@drbaker.us. Once again, that is info@drbaker.us. And so for anybody out there that's listening for the first time, we break the show down into segments. So today is Tech Tuesday, which means that we're going to talk about all things technology. Really excited about today's guest, that they are an expert in the tech space. And so just know that the topic that we'll cover today is important for all business owners, regardless of size. And when we talk about size, we're talking about anything below 50 million or 500 or less employees is what we're considering to be small business. That includes micro and boutique businesses, startup founders, mom and pop shops, and family-owned businesses that's been run for years. But there's also some larger businesses. When we say larger, we don't mean big business, but they're larger small businesses. And so if you own a company or a department head, the information that we're seeking to push to you is certainly something you would want to hear and implement in order to assist with the overall business health. But without further ado, I'd like to bring in today's guest because there's so much to cover today. And his name is Brad Gardner of Seven Hills Technology. Brad, how you doing today?
Doing pretty well. How are you?
Fantastic. All is well. Glad that you're here to join the show today. And one reason why I'm excited about your work is because I get more phone calls or I have more conversations around the work that you do, almost more than anyone else outside of whoever has money to provide that company. So if you don't mind, walk our listeners through what is Seven Hills Technology and what is it that you do?
Sure thing. Seven Hills Technology is a custom web and mobile software development company and technology consultancy. So we help companies plan, build, and implement technology that's strategic to their business to help them grow and just become a better version of themselves in a technical world.
Well, let's think about that for a moment when we talk about building a better version of themselves. And how do many companies see themselves from a tech standpoint? And then what is it that they either request or they think they need in order to enhance themselves, just based on your experiences?
So it depends on the type of company, but largely we see things like they're a company that sells something that you might be able to buy online. Then you see integrations with an e-commerce system, or just being able to sell their products online is kind of step one for a lot of companies. Other companies that might not be technically minded in the product that they sell or the service that they provide, there's always opportunity in making software talk to each other. So if you're an accountant or a lawyer, there's software that you use to file taxes or to track billable time against clients. And those things need to talk to accounting systems and whatever else you might be using internally. So those are the areas that we see people kind of dipping their toe in the water, and then it usually graduates into they might have an idea or some concept that is unique to them, or something somebody's not thought of before, where they want to start building that out into an actual product. And then that's where things get a little bit larger in scale, and it's where we really start to shine with them.
Well, you know, you talk about things getting a little bit larger. I actually want to park on that point for a moment. A lot of patients that I see have ideas on how the world should be run or ideas on what they can do differently, and they see it as their contribution to their industry or space, or even, I would say, their professionalism, something that they've done for a while. Then they transition out, they go to create a business, and one of the first requests is that I need an app or I need a platform or I need technology. And oftentimes what I've seen is that what needs to be built is grossly underestimated. How frequently do you see that when someone's coming and saying, hey, I'd like to, you know, build an app or a platform, and they really are uncertain about all the needs surrounding that technology?
The majority of the time when people like have that realization that they want to build something, they're not quite ready yet. That's been my experience. So there's a lot that goes into building an app, building a web application that people don't tend to realize. It can be a very, very large cost involved, and it can be very risky if you spend a lot of money building something that ultimately misses the mark and isn't as well thought out as maybe they think it is going in, then it's a lot of money that gets flushed down the drain. And it's a big risk factor for many companies getting started in the space.
Well, you know, risk comes in a lot of ways. On our Trending Thursday segments, we've had in here a few different times, CyberSure and Equal Williams of CyberSure comes in. He talks about different risks as it relates to technology, where you can be opened up for bad actors to hack or infringe. But when we talk about risk in this instance, we're talking about loss of money, loss of time, loss of, you know, or a crater in a department or a crater in even an entire company based on bad technology or technology that's not built out appropriately or timely. You know, when we look at that and we think about how often that happens, is that a big concern amongst, you know, business owners when they're considering building technology and ultimately looking to deploy it?
Absolutely. One of the hardest things to determine is if you're building the right thing and you're building it with the right features and ideas in mind. So when you get started, there's kind of an overarching idea that might drive what you're doing. But if ultimately you miss the mark and aren't providing the value that you want, it can be a lot of sunk cost that you can't really recover. And it's just it's something that really needs the time and attention spent up front to determine what it is we're building, why we're building it. We get into user experience and interaction design process up front, where you really want to spend the time interfacing with your customers, doing market research before you get to the point of building something. And that helps prove that out, and it helps remove the risk, at least remove some of the risk from the process of actually building out technology.
Well, when you talk about the build out, I've had to talk about this regularly, is that technology or building technology is identical to what used to happen in yesteryear when you wanted a brick and mortar and you had to take a second mortgage out and you had to make sure that there was equipment and inventory, uniforms, point of sale system. You had to have all the stuff, junk, and things in order to operate your company. But building out a technology is similar in that way, because you have to understand all the components and then have a game plan for what you're building, and those components have multiple layers inside of them. If you don't mind, kind of touch on how, you know, something as simple as an app that somebody might say, well, I'm just building a basic app. But even a basic app has multiple features and components to it. Is that right?
That's correct. So I both really like and dislike the construction analogy sometimes, because there's a lot of similarities where it is important to have the details, have a solid plan, and build things out. And then on the flip side of that, dealing with the amount of change that typically comes in a software project, you can get, unlike a building a building, you can get two-thirds of the way through and be like, you know, I don't want the building to look this way. Let's just change it right now. And that's something that is common in a software project, because we get a tighter feedback loop on those things. So, but as far as like the planning and implementation goes and what kind of components go into an app, there's a lot that people don't see. They think of it as the thing that runs on their phone if it's a mobile app, and that's the thing that they're using. But behind that, there's servers, and there's a back-end application to support the data, and there's a place where that data lives. And those things have to communicate, and they have to be able to account for how many users are going to be in the system. And then in order to have a really polished user experience, you have to account for every possible edge case, because as people start using an application that you build, what you find very quickly is that any tiny, small, unlikely edge case that is possible to be found will be found, and it'll be found usually on day one by some customer. And you have to account for those. Otherwise, you end up with an application that, while it has all the functions that you would want and all the functions you defined in it, it ends up being very buggy, and it ends up having a bunch of problems, just being a poor experience for somebody using it. And then they don't want to come back and use it anymore. That's why user experience is everything in that regard.
Well, I think we all can identify with that. And as a business owner, I think we lose sight of it sometimes, is that, let's say, for an example, the app is not your primary business. It's a supplement. We might, and let's call it a restaurant. And so you might have a heavy focus on how your meal is prepared or the presentation of the item, but you may not pay that same amount of attention to the user experience inside of your app, which you think you're going to use to capture market share, make something more convenient, increase the amount of wait or decrease the amount of wait time, on and on. But that user experience becomes everything, because that's technically and literally connecting to the mentality of the person. And we know how this generation can be, or at least this era of life, where things need to work, they need to work quickly, they need to be seamless. And even in that could increase your budget or increase your development timeline. Is that right?
That's exactly right. So the user experience really is everything anymore. If you have a public or consumer facing application, that, like a restaurant, like you mentioned, if people don't like it and people don't want to use it, it looks bad on your brand. It looks bad on your restaurant. It looks like you're not, it's not a good representation of you. And even if it's something that only your employees use, it doesn't do you very much good to have something that you spend a lot of time and a lot of money in, but ultimately your employees hate to use it. And in many cases, that means they'll find a way around using it, because people like to take the path of least resistance. But even in the best case, it just slows people down, makes them not enjoy what they're doing as much, and makes them not as efficient at their job. So on any side of that coin, the user experience drives pretty well everything.
What about the aesthetics of something? We know that the user experience is one thing, but are the aesthetics on the same playing field? Is it a little bit less? Is it more important? What does that look like?
I'd say slightly less, but pretty close to as important, because it's a representation of, one, your brand and your company, but also aesthetics and the general look and feel and style of an application plays very much into the experience of it. If it has all the features that you want, but it looks terrible and it doesn't really present very well, it still has that same kind of mental load on it, where it's like, man, this really just doesn't look great. I don't enjoy using it. I don't want to be here. It has all those same kind of negative emotional response to it.
Well, you know, when we think about these components, and the components in some instance, we don't really appreciate what goes into it. One thing that always touches on me when I'm looking at a patient and they say they would like to build technology is what can grow the cost. And so when we talk about having a budget, and in many cases, I think that the budget is based on things that maybe are not real, but if you actually sat back and you thought about what you were doing, you would recognize that you would need a larger budget to participate. And let me qualify that statement. We just finished talking about user experience and the aesthetics of an app. And if we were to think about the user experience just in general, well, a fully developed platform or fully developed restaurant, if you will, on the inside is very important. So if, you know, let's say we're still talking a restaurant, but there's only one entrance in and out, and the seats are too close together, and that, you know, the tables are wobbly. Well, you have to spend good money to make sure that your build out is appropriate. But simultaneously, when it comes to how does everything look, so if the menu is prepared well, if it's brought on dishes that look great, if the signage is good, that's what draws people in, and that also can become very pricey. The same goes for building out an app, is that you have to adequately look at all the components and then budget appropriately, right?
That's absolutely correct. It's hard to get right up front, because you don't always know exactly how some of the features are going to go. So doing estimation in this space is notoriously difficult. Software projects are very notorious for being over budget and over timeline. And it's something that, like, there's not a single company that can tell you that they don't have that challenge. It's a challenge for us, the challenge for every company we've ever partnered with. And that kind of goes into that budget conversation of you've got to get the product right. And some of the strategies we take for that, or that we see in the industry, are to scope down. So you're building out only what we call an MVP, or a minimum viable product. So you start with what is the simplest, like, polished, well done thing that I can build here that is useful to my audience, whether it's my customers at the restaurant, or whether it's my employees. What is the first thing I can build that's useful to them? And then stop there and then immediately move into a feedback stage of like, okay, what, like, how are you using this? Do you like using it? Does it look good? Does it feel good? What other features would you like to see in it? And let your customers and let the users of the software drive your decisions moving forward on what to build next. Because that's how you stay like with value in mind, especially if this is something that's revenue generating. Because then you can maximize that to help continued investments in building out new software.
How regularly involved is Seven Hills with creating a budget for a business owner and helping them understand what needs to be developed and what things that you could potentially punt on, you know, for lack of terms, to say, hey, we'll hold off here and we'll develop that later, but to develop a sound budget to carry them throughout the entire project, how frequently do you work with business owners on that?
That's a core part of every project that we do and every project that I think most companies that are in our space should be doing. And it starts at the very beginning where we might have kind of a loose idea of what we want to build, and we spend some time up front, and this is all part of the project work, spend some time up front dealing with the client and helping them figure out, okay, what features do we want to build? What's the target audience? Do we know who we're talking to? Do we know who we're building this for? And then kind of getting through that initial phase of design and definition and the user experience, and then we help them set, like, what is an appropriate, call it monthly burn rate, where we're going to, you know, have a team of three developers, a QA analyst, and a project manager working part-time on it as well. And we'll set that up as a burn rate and say, this is going to take, you know, we think somewhere between 4 and 6 months, so let's start there. And then we run things in small iterations, and every iteration we, you know, review the budget and detail out, like, are we on target for that initial estimate? Do we need to move it up, move it back? And whatever kind of adjustments do we need to make? We can scope down features to like, reprioritize the things that we're building based on customer feedback, or we can eliminate features entirely or add new ones. So it's kind of it's an evolving process through the entire build and for the ongoing part of it. And that's something that I think a lot of people miss, is that and where the construction analogy tends to fall short is anybody who tells you up front that I can tell you exactly how much the software is going to cost and we can do that up front and then build to that and be accurate with it, I won't say it's dishonest, but it's incorrect. And so the reason it's incorrect is somebody is going to be missing out there. It's either going to go way over, or the company is going to eat a lot of cost in them eating the overages for spending the additional time and cost more for anybody who does project costing accurately.
Well, how does that process typically go with the business owner? Are they open to it? Are they shocked due to it? You know, are they amenable, meaning that they hear it and they say, you know, we're going to do something about that? Or is it the entire gambit? Does it run the entire scale?
It definitely runs the entire scale. Usually once we get things going a little bit, and we like to bring things in very, very small increments. So it's like, you know, we can start this off, we can do, you know, we can take it 2 weeks at a time and keep our billing to that, keep the size scope with that. We can run, like, if you want to go faster, we can add people. If we want to go slower, we can, you know, pull people back and spend less hours. So I think that flexibility usually softens the concept, because a lot of business owners and a lot of people who are in control of the budgets for companies, they might come into it with that kind of construction mentality of, I need to know exactly how much is it going to cost so I can go to my board and I can request this much budget for this year and get that assigned. And then I've got to control the cost to fit exactly in that budget. And the truth is, it can be a hard thing, because, say, if the budget is fixed and the timeline is fixed, then the scope has to change. And that's the only way to actually make the project work.
You know, and it makes sense that it would work that way. And just when you're talking about apps, even though apps have been around a long time, I mean, I remember a friend of mine saying, and this was so long ago, that he said, I'm going to create an app and I'm going to be one of the first people to ever have an app. And I kept asking him, like, what are you even talking about? And what is this app? I literally remember that conversation and having such an abstract view of it that I couldn't understand where he was going with it. But even though that's been, you know, years and years and decades ago from that standpoint, is that how do people feel about it now when you speak with them? Or do you feel like they understand what apps are and what the purpose is for the apps? Do they think they need one because they just don't have one and they've heard and have been told that they needed to have one? Do they even understand how they're going to leverage it or even monetize it? What does that look like in your world?
I'd say over the past decade or so, we've kind of run a full like pendulum swing on it, where we went from nobody knows what an app is, and it's kind of this ephemeral thing that people are talking about. And then we went to, like, everybody has to have an app. And now I think we're seeing a little bit more where people, they understand it. Everybody's got, you know, 500,000 apps that are running on their phone at all times. And they use apps for different companies they're involved with. Everybody's, you know, paying people with Venmo and other cash apps and whatnot. So it's become like a part of our culture now. So I think people understand it. And then even at the company level, we're seeing like a lot more strategic decisions of like, we don't need an app just because we want to jump on the bandwagon. We actually want to like identify a strategic reason to have an app. So I think we're settling into a good place there.
And then notably, just for the benefit of our listeners, what do we consider to be the differences between an app and, let's say, a website?
So the way that I describe it is a website. When I'm talking about websites, I'm talking about your marketing site. Somebody goes into, you know, in our case, www.sevenhillstechnology.com. It's the thing you see that is primarily focused in marketing and branding and just informational content, maybe a contact us here form, something of that nature. Those are generally much, I don't want to say simpler, because the design is more complicated oftentimes in terms of visual design for a marketing site than a lot of the applications we might build. But it's a little bit easier to put that together. And then when I talk about web applications or mobile applications, we're talking things that are a little bit more involved and more interactive, in the sense that it's a tool that you're using to perform a task, more so than it is a place you're going to collect or gather information. So if you think about like a social network like Facebook or something like Instagram or Twitter, that's something that is very much more a web application, where you're going on there and you're interacting with it in a productive way. If you think about your accounting system that you use or your time tracking system for your job, that sort of thing is much more of an application. And same with mobile apps. If it runs on the phone, it's a mobile app. It's a little bit more clear cut. But I think that's kind of where the line breaks down for me.
I know I look at a lot of businesses, and we know that it is pretty much mandatory for you to have a website. I say pretty much because there are some freelance opportunities that don't always require them. Overhead is really low. They don't need to generate much revenue, and therefore they can kind of get away with it depending on their skill set. But more times than not, most businesses have to have a website, but that does not denote that they have to have an app. And how do you reconcile some of those conversations and those debates, you know, even with a business owner, to say I should have one or the other or both?
Yeah, I agree. Pretty much every company needs to have a website. It's kind of an expectation for a lot of people, especially the younger crowd. They go and they check you out online. If they can't find your website, they question whether you exist. And that's a starting point. Now, from the perspective of actually having to have an app, my only advice there is to think strategically of, say you do build an app, if all you're trying to do is get content out, you're probably not getting a lot of value. The return on that investment is going to be really long. But what you're looking for is, are you enhancing the way that customers interact with you? Or are you enhancing the productivity of your employees? Or who's the user of the app? Who is actually going to be getting value out of it? And does that ultimately get a return on your investment for building it? Because building an application is much more of an investment generally than building a website.
Well, and that helps individuals understand the differentiation, especially when they're in deliberation on what should they do, how should they do. There's always so much conflicting information going on, not to mention people are being encouraged to make decisions or to make moves and create actions that in one instance may be helpful, but maybe in another instance it may be premature. It's never premature to have a website, but in some cases, it could be premature to have an app. And when you start talking app development, I mean, I know that I've seen it, and I'm just curious to some of the numbers you've seen. It's very common to see an app for $200,000 or $300,000, but it's also common to see an app for $20,000 or $30,000, and you know there's some that go into the millions. What do you see on, and I don't even think that there is an average, but what do you see, and is that number something that is shocking to individuals when they start to research and they might begin their research with you?
Yeah, again, it's something that kind of runs the full gamut of expectations. So we see, in our case, if somebody's coming to us looking to build an application, it would be a stretch for us to build something really well done that has a fair amount of functionality in it that's less than $50,000. I think that would be on the inexpensive side of one of our projects at this stage. That being said, it can be done if you're looking at something where you have a lower budget and want to get something accomplished. That's where you really want to enter like freelancer territory, because there are a ton of really good freelancers out there who are great in mobile app development, and they don't have the overhead of a company behind it to have to build that out. So there's options in that space as well. And then definitely on the upper end of that, if you're building applications for large companies that have really complicated integration and back-end things that they want to talk to, and just up to the complexity, you can easily get into hundreds of thousands of dollars, or even in the really large company territory, millions of dollars spent on building out an application.
Well, I want to focus on that word of building. You know, when I think of building, and whether it's an apartment building or a high-rise, is, you know, I'm not great at construction management. Obviously, I work with companies that are in the space, but I'm individually not well-versed. But I'm always kind of in awe when you see an open field or there's a demolition site, and then you see the surveyor surveying the land, then you see the excavators come out, on and on, and before you know it, there's a structure there, and then you blink again, and commerce is going on inside of that building that at one time it was nothing. Well, when we think about building an app or a platform, if you will, similar things happen there, is that you are taking a concept, and in many cases, may not even have any imagery to it. You're piecing together what the business owner is saying and saying, all right, based on your words, this is what this looks like in code, this is what this looks like in design, and here's your final product or your deliverable. How difficult of a process is that for someone that's never gone through it? And then what is the benefit of taking the time to legitimately plan out and carve that this is the way this should go, and then doing it with experts, as opposed to just saying, I like an app, I can kind of piece one together on my own with one of these, you know, widget type companies, as opposed to doing it in a way that says, no, we're going to build this from scratch, we're going to own the assets, and then put it out in a very comprehensive and strong manner?
Yeah, the short answer is it is extremely complicated and very difficult to get that process right. For us, what that looks like is that we start leading with the user experience, because we can interact with the design team and then interact with the customer and our design team and build like a clickable prototype where you can kind of like, you can see it, feel it, interact with it on your phone even, but it's not real. It's just a prototype or a mock-up, if you will, and that is drastically less expensive to build, and that's usually the best way to determine if you're on target with what the company who wants to build this is looking for in their head, is to show them your interpretation of what they're saying and then let them give you feedback on it. So that's usually where we start, and that helps to like reduce the amount of budget spend up front and make sure that we're really exactly on target with the ending result. And you can also take that and do market research with it, which is a great way to facilitate that, or even take it to go and get funding and things of that nature to help with that process. On the flip side of that, you can be really agile with like a freelancer. So you can find somebody who's well-versed in this and just like start coding and start putting up an app and keep changing that and updating the design and updating the features as you go until you get where you want. It's a little risky in some areas where that can be unending and it can be a budget sink, even if like the hourly rate is lower. So there's a kind of a mix and match, and we're a little bit more slow paced where we might spend 2 weeks or even a month working with a client on a project before we write a line of code. That way we can make sure that we have the visual aspect and the layout and the user experience and the plan in place before we start writing code. And that's even acknowledging that as soon as we start writing code, we're expecting changes to come up throughout the process even with all of that upfront work.
How frequently, you know, as you guys navigate with business owners and they're seeking to create an app or a platform, whether it's a startup founder or whether it's an existing business, how realistic are their initial requests? I know as a business doctor and I'm working with patients, I've been, you know, a part of meetings, appointments, sessions, where the request has been just literally so large, just the magnitude of what they want to do is literally impossible because of their scale scope. I mean, it would be something on the scale of what Zuckerberg may want or what Elon Musk may want, but they don't know that. How frequently do you all get requests like that?
I would say that we don't have too many requests that are like outside the realm of possibility. There's certainly, we get an element of sticker shock where we might tell somebody this is going to take us $150,000 worth of investment to build out, and we might want to break it down. So we get a bit of that. Largely where I think the disconnect is for people who have not been through the process before is how much the devil truly is in the details, where something as simple as building out a simple page with a form for people to fill out can actually take a lot of time and a lot of effort. And it's because you're covering all those little details that people don't think about, but they experience. So if you're filling out like a form for your profile on a website, and it's things like what kind of characters are allowed to go in the first name box, and how many characters can there be, and how many should there be, what fields are required, and how do we show error messages when they miss a required field. And all of those little tiny details have to be spelled out. And that is what kind of increases the amount of time that even something simple can take. And those are the things that I think people don't realize until they start sitting down and thinking through it. I'm like, oh, there is actually a lot. There's a lot of little details in here. And that applies to every screen of an app, to every request to a server that it makes. It's like, what are the edge cases? What can go wrong? How do we handle it when it does go wrong without crashing the app on somebody? Because it's a terrible user experience when the app locks up and crashes. So those are the things that I think catch people off guard, that they understand in hindsight once they have the conversation, but it's not something they usually come in with.
Makes sense. Well, we need to stop right there for a moment for a station identification. Once again, everyone, this is Doctor's Orders. I am Dr. Baker. We are joined today by our guest, Brad Gardner of Seven Hills, and today's segment of Tech Tuesday is brought to you by Pro Elite Training. That's Pro Elite, all one word. And Pro Elite Training allows you to train with professional athletes to increase your rhythm, tempo, and pace through the metronome of music. You can get Pro Elite Training by going to getproelite.com or going into your Play Stores and going to Pro Elite Training. Big red T will pop up. You can then download it. It is a free model, meaning that you can get hundreds of free drills that you can work with, and you can work with our pro athletes on the premium level of $4.99. Once again, that's Pro Elite Training. That is brought to you by On Tech Tuesdays with Pro Elite Training. Train with the best. So, Brad Gardner, tell everyone once again, what is Seven Hills Technology, and how do you guys service your clients?
Absolutely. Seven Hills Technology is a custom web and software development shop. We're also a technology consultancy, so we help people plan strategically for their business and how technology is implemented, and help them become kind of a better version of themselves through implementing technology.
And if someone wanted to find Seven Hills Technology, how could they reach you guys?
SevenHillsTechnology.com is the best way. You can also email info@SevenHillsTechnology.com.
All right, fantastic. And everyone, today we are talking about just technology in your business. Should you build an app? Should you, you know, have a website? What goes into the process? What are the expectations? What are some of the pitfalls, Brad, that people run into that you've seen or that you have to make them aware of when it comes to being a business owner and saying, I want to engage in technology? What have you seen that you're like, well, they probably should pay attention to this or be more conscious of that?
Biggest pitfall is jumping in too quick. Building a, like, truly sitting down and building a piece of software, whether it's something internal to run your business or an app for your customers, it is a big endeavor. It is a big commitment. And even when it's, I'll hesitate to use the word done because it's never truly done, but when you get something released and ready to be used by the intended audience, there's a continued investment. And these are things that people don't always realize, that software is not, it's not something that you write it and it stays working forever. It's it strangely rots and needs upkeep because there's a security landscape of bugs and issues that come up and updates that need to happen and maintenance that needs to happen. You might put an app on the App Store and then 2 months later, Apple comes out with a new rule, and now you have to invest in changing your app to accommodate their rules. Or you might be supporting a login with Facebook, and Facebook changes how that works, and now you have to update that. Or there just might be security vulnerabilities that were discovered, and so you have to do maintenance. So there's a continued investment that I think gets overlooked up front, or people don't understand. And then the upfront investment of building it can be high, and it can be higher than people think. And you can minimize some of that risk with appropriate planning, appropriate definition, and strategic conversations. And that's why we like to get into those conversations early.
Makes all the sense in the world from that standpoint. I think that the speed of things come from panic. You know, if I don't hurry up and get this out, someone else will. And, you know, or they need to do something from a measure of desperation, meaning that they're looking to capture a new market, they need more revenue, and they've already made the decision to move forward, and now they're moving pretty quickly, and things get forgotten there. You know, when we talk about, you know, first person to market, a lot of times, being first is important, but having a good product first is even more important. And so planning to have a very good product out there that you can stand behind, that you have enough scale on your frame in order to be able to handle that growth, and enough bandwidth to run the company becomes very vital. You know, when you talk about, you know, companies that engage in technology, what are some of the unique ways that you're seeing companies operate? And I'm not asking anything proprietary, but we know websites are there, apps are there, but, you know, what about systems usage to where maybe they don't want an off-the-shelf solution, but they actually want their own solution, and therefore they can maintain their data themselves? Or are there any other technology needs that you see business owners taking advantage of?
Yeah, kind of what you're touching on there, that last bit, is that kind of buy versus build conversation, which comes up a lot. And let's be honest, a lot of software has been written. If you need to track the status of a project and track tasks for a project that you're running, there's probably hundreds and hundreds of really, really well-built project management software that you can invest in. And so, like, why would you build your own? A lot of companies wrestle with that same thing, where everybody thinks they're sufficiently unique. Very few companies at their, like, operations level truly are sufficiently unique. Their product or their service or their offering might be, but at the end of the day, the business fundamentals are kind of the same, and, like, their internal needs are generally the same. So those are areas where we see people kind of making some missteps sometimes, where, like, you know, we can't get this tool, or we can't find something that fits our need exactly, so we're going to build it. But in reality, it could be solved a little bit more with some business process adjustment, where if you just adjust your process a little bit, then these tools actually work for you really well, and you don't have to worry about investing what could be almost forever in building your own technology.
And so we're always looking at the pros and the cons of either or, you know, how much resources you have available to you, what is that technology mean to you, and how you're going to leverage it. But once again, those are checkoff boxes that you have to check off to understand that is building, you know, or borrowing, if you will, is a better solution one way or the other. And so looking at that, when you're looking at, you know, business owners that say, you know what, I really want to engage in this, and I'm going to change my business model to now do something, whether it's virtual, whether it's e-commerce, or they make a substantial change in how they typically do business, are there any warnings or thoughts that go along with that when they're making decisions on transitioning fully into technology?
Yeah, it can be very difficult. Honestly, the big topic right now is just staffing. So developers are in really high demand, and you can get a lot of junior developers on the market right now. Because, you know, boot camps are cranking out developers that with a pretty fast pace, honestly. And the kind of more experienced developers are kind of sitting tight. So if you're looking at transitioning into the space, you need to consider, like, do you want to be a software development company? So do you want to employ software developers, and do you want to in-house the knowledge and expertise and have to manage those people? For some companies, it's absolutely the right move. And then, or do you want to go to a company like us and just fully outsource that to a company here? That's a strategy that works for a number of companies as well. There's obviously the more like notorious examples of like outsourcing overseas and things like that. They have a place as well. And a whole bunch of hybrid models where you can hire a team but use some outsourced resources and kind of split it a bit, half and half. We have some clients of ours that do that. So there's kind of a mix there, but that's a hard one to solve, is how do you want to assign the resources to this? Because there's different cost models in all of that. And if you're going to hire developers in-house, then you have to be concerned with, are you the kind of organization that software developers want to work for? And there's a cultural aspect to it. And you have to be able to worry about retention and turnover and things like that. Whereas working with a company for us, it might be like us, it might be a little bit more expensive, but you might not have to deal with those things, especially if it's a, maybe the initial build of some software is the largest cost. And then the ongoing maintenance of it for years is lower on the priority list. So maybe that's a part you can in-house with like one or two developers and have a bigger team build out the initial software. So kind of strategizing around how to approach that from a staffing resource and budgeting perspective is something that I think gets like kind of swept under the rug a little bit.
You know, I want to talk about staffing a little bit more, and I want to go based on your experiences. If, let's say for an example, you've got a team full of junior developers and coders. And when we're talking juniors, how are we classifying them? Are we classifying them as an experience, as credential, as in demonstrable success beforehand, age limit? What are we talking about when we say junior, and what's important between a junior and a senior developer?
So for me, I would usually classify it as levels of experience. So I think the any kind of credentials or specific tooling and even specific experience is not, or education for that matter, is not terribly important above and beyond just basic like aptitude and ability to learn and grow, because the technology space moves so fast that the tools I was using when I started my career are completely obsolete now and not something that anybody's using anymore. So that's kind of element number one, and the kind of dividing line between like a junior and senior to me is like somebody who's in a junior role still needs a lot of help. So it's somebody that there's an excellent place, like we're quite passionate about bringing on junior people and educating and training and helping them grow into careers. But at the same time, you have to round that out with some people who are more in like that mid to senior experience level who can function relatively independently and be a mentor for junior staff members.
And so understanding that differentiation is a point of how you decide what company to hire, what company not to hire. But you talked about the shortage of coders that are going on now. And is that because of a lack of interest in the space, so therefore you have less human capital, or is it the demand and the human capital cannot keep up with the demand?
I think it's probably a little bit more the latter. There's definitely interest in the space, and that we've got tons of junior people entering the space, which is great. There's most companies that I'm aware of are hiring software developers, but the majority of them are not hiring junior software developers. So there's a disconnect in what the job market has available and what in terms of people, and then what companies are hiring for. I think there's a lot of that is on the company to not be so stringent about only hiring people with prior experience. And like, to be successful in this job market, you have to be willing to invest in people and invest in the culture and the training and the mentorship that's required to bring junior people up to speed.
And so with that, you know, as a company is going through that, that obviously alters the bandwidth and how many projects can be taken at one time. Is that something that a business owner should question when they're vetting out, who should I work with to build my app or to build my platform? Or is that just something that's internal that the company just seems to have to manage and you leave that internal?
I said, right, I mean, it's going to change the job market, obviously, but right now, if you're looking at hiring developers, it's just a tough market. If you don't have the internal staff already, then you really do need to get somebody who's got experience, because you can't really support junior developers without having somebody more experienced in the mix. And so those kind of companies that would be well suited to hiring developers are really going to struggle right now. So that's just the unfortunate situation that we're currently in. I mean, the market conditions change constantly, so it always just has to be part of the decision making process of, like, when do we want to do this? And if we want to do it in this market, then we might be looking at maybe we hire a junior developer and we bring in an outside team to help mentor and train our junior developer to become like our full time person who's responsible for this long term, and kind of like mix strategies a little bit.
Does the general public understand, you know, essentially all that goes in through this? I know on my end, so many assumptions are made when I look at, you know, different levels of social media, when I look at the questions that come in, is that I'm not so certain that we still have fully grasped how technology can make our work more efficient, how we can leverage it better for dollars. And let me qualify that. Part of it is growing a business out. Part of it is looking to partner. Part of it is looking for exits. Part of it is building out market share. But do you think, based on your perspective and experience, that we've gotten a handle on how best to use technology for our benefits, or is there still a lot more guidance and education that needs to be given?
I think it's a matter of continuous guidance and education, because as soon as we start to understand where technology fits in, the technology tends to change on us. So there's always like new emerging technology and topics that come into play, and how those impact the market are still always like trying to settle out. And you can look back not even too long ago. I mean, the iPhone was released in 07, I believe. We're not that far out from like smartphones not being a thing. And now they're ubiquitous. And I'd say that we have a pretty solid understanding of the smartphone ecosystem and mobile apps and things like that. My kids certainly do when they're, you know, 10 and 7. But moving forward from that, there's new things all the time. Whether it's like Internet of Things has been a topic in the last couple of years. You get into like blockchain technology and how that might impact things like contracts and things like real estate transactions, for example. And the truth is, with a lot of emerging technology, we don't know the true usefulness of it because we're still figuring it out. Even the people who are well read into the technology are still figuring out what's going to stick and what's not, and then how that impact is going to play out. So that it is definitely a continuing education thing from our perspective and from the general public's perspective.
And if it's continuing education, what formal bridges exist that ensures that formal education takes place? I know that, you know, we're not talking about going back to school in these instances, or maybe not even certifications, but what legs, what arms exist out there, you know, conduits, if you will, that facilitate continuing ed to make sure that these coders are not just staying up to par, but they're actually ahead of the game as it relates to development?
That's kind of a hard one, because I think that's an area where technology and industry really suffers. It suffers on communicating its use and usefulness to people who are not involved in it, and then people who are involved in technology oftentimes struggle to find the greater community that exists there and how to interact with that community and to learn and grow. And then there's always like the risk of, am I learning the right things? You might learn some technology that's from Microsoft, and then a year from now, they're like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. And so there's always this like risk of going down the wrong path. And am I following the right people in the right community? Am I interacting with the right crowd to keep up to date? So that whole concept of staying up to date in technology is a very challenging and evolving one in and of itself.
What is your ecosystem like? You know, are professionals willing to share information, or is everything taboo and you have to figure it out on your own?
Largely, I think most professionals in this industry are quite willing to share information. You have some on the very on the extreme side of it, where everything is open source and we're sharing even in code and the way that things are implemented. And I think that's a fantastic ecosystem that's been growing and thriving, and that's kind of getting a bit of a resurgence even. And then even a little bit more closed up than that, there's still frequent like meetup groups and so that. So if you're into a certain type of technology, there will be groups locally and online forums and where people are just sharing their experience and what they're working on, what kind of technology they're implementing, how to work with it. So I think largely the development and technology community is quite helpful and quite open about sharing knowledge in a variety of forms.
Which I think is a very good thing, because if the industry is healthy, that helps everyone. And in the event that, you know, there's conflict and you guys start pulling each other down or you start holding information, yeah, it might benefit one company, but it may not benefit the masses. And the goal is to make sure that the industry stays healthy, stays away from, you know, people that are not legitimate experts or high-level professionals in the space, but that they just become freelancers that are available because there's a breakdown of communication across all the grids. I think when you are a business owner and you're searching for answers and you're looking to do something different, the different by itself is hard enough. Transition, pivot, adjustment, all of those words are not just, you know, buzzwords. Those words are fear words for a lot of business owners, especially when they haven't engaged in technology at all. And so you've got a scenario here where the coders, the business owners in your space can actually bridge that gap and make the transition into technology much more easy, much more simpler, so therefore they can have a better relationship with it. You know, explain to the listeners as it relates to how, when they go to grow their business through technology, that it's also, now you talked about ongoing maintenance, but it's not just the one-time cost that you have, but you really need to have the appropriate forecast, the right budgeting. All of that stuff has to be in place really from the beginning to manage this business out, because the way I look at it, and I'm curious to your position on this, but even if you have a business and you decide that you want to build technology, it's almost like creating a separate business because of how much you need to pay attention to that aspect of technology. For an example, a Big Mac is a Big Mac. It's a burger inside of McDonald's, but it's also its own branded entity away from a McChicken. And so the supply chain, the commercialization, how to attract attention to that particular sandwich, all of that is like a business within a business. I view technology very similar to that. What do you say to that position?
I couldn't agree more. Largely, the thing to understand is that if you're going to start investing in technology, particularly in software, it can be incredibly expensive, but it can also have a very great return on investment. And like every company is going to end up investing in technology in some capacity. The employees need computers. They need to be running machines. There's some level of technology that's already out there for almost every business that I've ever interacted with. And in large cases, those are simply a cost center. It's some line items on your operating expenses on your P&L. But to actually take that and turn it around and say, we're going to invest in technology as a way to make us more productive, you can actually have a pretty strong ROI, and it becomes an investment opportunity more so than a cost center. So if you're using a mobile app to drive engagement that results in more revenue, or if you're offering a service online that wasn't previously offered and is a new revenue stream for you, those things can be incredibly valuable. But it is important to realize that there are ongoing operational expenses associated with all of that investment. So it is definitely not we're going to drop, you know, a large capital expenditure on this project and then the cost goes away. The cost can severely reduce if you're only having to maintain it and just do routine updates and support it. But largely, once you start getting into that space, what you find is that you end up wanting to be competitive. And you find that, okay, we've got this thing, it's great, and now the customers are like, but what if we also had this feature? And what if we had that feature? And it'd be great if it also did this. And, well, this other company, this other competitor, their app does this feature. And then you're in this space now where you're a technology company and you have to build to respond to your customer feedback, because you're giving them another avenue for feedback. You're giving them another avenue for interpretation of your brand. And so it becomes a core part of your business pretty quickly.
Well, you know, and that's a quick learning curve as well, is that,
yes,
you know, you might go from selling widgets or food or clothes or, you know, manufactured goods, commodities, now all of a sudden you're dealing in technology as the owner. And so that's a really quick paradigm shift, because if your business has now been predicated on the technology, you have to make sure that that technology works, or it could be a setback. You know, for the benefit of our audience, you know, Brad, once again, remind everyone about Seven Hills and where they can reach you in the event that they need any technology built or they need your assistance.
Absolutely. We'd love to talk to anybody. So Seven Hills Technology, we're based here in Cincinnati. We've got an office in Sharonville. We're a custom web and mobile software development company. We also do technology strategy and consulting. So we help companies plan and implement and build the technology that drives their business. You can reach us at sevenhillstechnology.com, and you can also email us at info@sevenhillstechnology.com.
Yeah, which is fantastic. I know I've seen your work firsthand, and I think what's always been great about the work that you all do isn't so much about the deliverable, although I know for most people that's what it's all about, is I hire you to do a job. Did you get the job done? But after working with so many different technologies and technology companies, different patients that have technology, what I can attest to is that how you go through the process is very important, how you deal with changes and things that are off schedule and things that was known at one time that become unknown. How do you deal with that? And, you know, you guys' company adjust with that really well. I think that that's an overlooked quality that many business owners, I think, don't take enough stock in, because they're so busy that they want things to just, here's some dollars and let's make it work and go. But how you navigate through the journey is very important. I think it's a reminder of even how we run our own businesses. When we think about our clients, and in my case, my patients, are we making the journey easy for them in order to incline or enjoy our service or enjoy our product? And you guys have been able to do that. We only have a few moments left, but talk to us a little bit about that real quick before we transition off the air. It's about that commitment to customer service and excellence, and how did you guys build an entity that can focus on that?
Yeah, I mean, for us, my personal background is I came up in the consulting environment, so I've worked with a lot of different companies, a lot of different spaces, and that's the part that I really enjoy, is learning how a business works and learning what's important to them and how we can help implement things. So that kind of goes through all of our all the work that we do. So it's customers first. It's making sure that we're building the right thing at the right time for the right value. And so we're always looking for how do we reduce the risk? How do we increase the understanding of what we're building? And how do we adjust to change? Because it can be a big endeavor. It can be a big project. It can be a big investment. And that's something that we don't take lightly. And that's pretty core for, I think, any development company to be successful right now.
Well, I think that hits the nail right on the head. Brad Gardner, thank you so much for joining us on today's show. We Tech Tuesdays, everyone. Once again, I'm Dr. Baker of the Business Hospital. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we hope to see you tomorrow on Worldwide Wednesday. Have a great one.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.